guys, welcome back to Tea Talks with Lex. Today's episode is going to be about episode 4 of Quiet on the Set. I'm going to put a trigger warning here because we're going to be talking about sexual assault. So if that's not something that you can stomach, you can handle, please feel free to exit out of this and move on to the episode after this. That is totally okay with me. So in this episode, it talks about the courtroom, who wrote notes, all these things that happened in this episode. We are at the end going to talk about Dan Schneider's interview. And we're also going to talk about something that came up in episode 5, because episode 5 was really just sitting down, talking to Drake, talking about what happened, the outpour of support for him, and, you know, all these things. And I just feel like one part of that episode was really, really important to touch on here. So, we're going to jump into it. So if you haven't listened to any other episode recap, at this point, Brian Peck is arrested for what he did to Drake Bell. Now, I want to note something that's important here to mention, because at the time Brian Peck is arrested and what have you after that, nobody in Hollywood knows it's Drake till after they go to court, is what I'm alleging at this point. Because I would like to believe one name on this list of individuals who wrote a letter would not have written a letter had he known it was Drake Bell. Although he has not come out and talked about said letter, but that's neither here nor there. We're also going to talk about at the end two people who kind of did speak on this letter way before this documentary came out, which I find that to be a little suspect in my mind, but we're not going to go there. So at this point, Brian is arrested. They're going to court, and Drake walks in there, and Brian's side of the courtroom is full. While Drake's there with his mom and his brother, Brian's side of the courtroom is filled with industry people all over the place. And from that point, all of these individuals knew who it was, because his mom made a statement about what Brian Peck did. And I gotta say, I give Drake props for the way he chose to handle this moment, because in my mind, if I was reading a statement to the person who did horrible things to me, I would be grinding my gears into that man. But he's right about one thing. Brian was already in that courtroom. He was already getting in trouble for what he did. But there was a side full of people who were defending this monster. So instead of taking his time to address Brian and what Brian did, he turned and looked at them and said, you guys will be forever embedded in my mind as the people who are defending a man who did horrible things to me. And I feel that that's important to mention, because I think we often times, like even myself, like when I was first watching it, I was so focused, especially when it came to like what actually happened to Drake. I was like, Brian Peck is the enemy. Brian Peck is a problem. You know, all these things. And I was sitting there and I was like, you know, where was, you know, why wasn't his mother listening to his father? And then I'm sitting there and he says this in the documentary about how he addresses that side of the room. And, you know, and how he addresses that side of the room and all these things, and how, you know, that side of the room was there and they were defending this man. And it just really reminded me of like how important it is to like deal with the abuser, but also deal with people who are defending somebody who did something horrible to you. Like, you know, it just really hit me. So I do think it's interesting that Brian Peck pleads no contest, which I forget what exactly that means, so give me 1 second. So you guys know what pleading So basically, he pleads no contest, and he basically, so basically he pleads no contest to get an appeal is what I am taking that as. I may be inaccurate, but I think that's literally what it is. So Brian pleads no contest. He spends 16 months in jail. So 16 months in jail is what this man got while pleading no contest to what he did. And it just kind of blows my mind that that's what he does. So now we're going to talk about for a hot second, two things. So after Brian's out of jail, he gets to go work at Disney on The Suite Life of Zack and Cody. Why is this man still allowed in the industry? Why is this man still working? Is my question. And then we get to all of these letters that were written. So we're going to write real quick, like, the letters that the people who wrote letters. The people who wrote letters were actor James Masterson. There was 41 names. I only got, like, some of them, so just bear with me. James Masterson, Taryn Killman. I'm coming back to you, Taryn. We need to talk. Alan Thicke. He is dead. There's nothing we can do about it now. Thomas DeCento, Ryder Strong, and Will Ferdiel. We're going to come back to you, Ryder and Will. We're going to come back to you. Jonah Keane wrote a letter of support that she now takes back. I just wanted to mention that she now takes it back. She now claims to have not known anything about this. Rich and Kim May Robertson writes a letter. Rich and Beth Cornell write letters. Who give him a job on Sweet Life of Zack and Cody, which is insanity to me. And it is important to note that in 2005, he does get another case of it. So it goes back to Dan after this. So we go talk about Drake a little bit. So I'm going to kind of address these letters of support real quick, because that's what irks me the most, are three people on this list. Taryn Killman. And the reason why Taryn Killman bothers me is because that man had a friendship with Drake, and he sat on the other side of the courtroom as his friend was recalling these horrible things that happened to him, and he still defended this man. Why, Taryn? And the fact that you haven't at least come out, like, at least Beth and Rich have tried to, like, downplay what they wrote and been like, oh, I'm so sorry. Like, at least some of these people are pretending that they care, that they did what they did, and acting like they care. But this man is silent. Deafening silence from him. Why? Did you sign an NDA like some other people? Did you agree to never speak of the situation again? That's what that's giving me. That's the vibes that it's giving me. So now we're going to talk about Will and Ryder, because they did a podcast episode on Boy Meets Pod a while back, talking about this situation. So I am looking at a Variety article because I want to make sure I'm accurate with this information. I don't want to spread false information. So on the Boy Meets Pod podcast, They took a break from recapping Boy Meets World with their latest episode, which was filmed on December 19th. I feel like that's important to know that Danielle, Ryder, and Will were joined by family therapist Katie Mora, an important discussion around Brian Peck, a seasoned guest star on Boy Meets World. Per the episode's official description, the group talks about the difficult subjects, blah, 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 of what happened. You know, and they go on to talk about how, here we go. What Fertile had to say was this. I didn't really go to parties. I didn't really do that stuff. But I was working a lot after Boy Meets World. And this guy integrated in himself into my life. And I took him to 3 shows after Boy Meets World. This was the type of thing where the person he presented was this great, funny guy who was really good at his job. And you wanted to hang out with him. I saw him every day, hung out with him every day, and talked to him every day. And Strong said they hung out every day. Hung out outside of work all the time. Another one, and Ryder didn't find it weird that he was older than him, but whatever. All these years of having stand-ins, no one ever, do I remember, regularly went to lunch with the cast members, but this person did, and part of that's because when they arrived on set, they were extremely charming, they were extremely personable. Additionally, he was gay, and the youngest cast member, the other adults on set who maybe should have or should have said, why are you guys going to lunch with this guy? Why is this guy going to Ryder's house for a party? This is probably part of that them that didn't say it because they were afraid. So they make excuse, yada, 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 for why they didn't question, whatever. And so Fredo goes on to say that he talks about when he was accused in 2003, instantly spinning it to where it wasn't his fault. It was clearly the fault of the victims. At first, Fredo believed him. My instinct initially was, my friend, this can't be. It's got to be the other person's fault. The story makes complete sense the way he's saying it. So he also said, they also go on to say that he didn't say nothing had happened. So by the time we heard about this case and knew anything about it, it was always in the context of, I did this, I'm guilty, I'm going to take whatever punishment the governor determines, but I'm the victim of jailbait. There was this hot guy, I just did this, and he's underage, and we bought the storylines. I never heard about other things because back then you couldn't Google to find out what people were being charged with. So in retrospect, he was making a plea deal and admitting one thing, which is all he admitted to us. But it looks like he was being charged with serious crimes, which we did not know. We were sitting in that courtroom, the wrong side of everything. The victim's mother turned and said, look at all the famous people you brought with you, and it doesn't change what you did to my kid. Friedel explained, I just sat there wanting to die. It was like, what the hell am I doing here? Strong and Friedel wrote letters to, we weren't told the whole story, but it doesn't change the fact that we did it, said Friedel. I still can't get the words out to describe all the things that I'm feeling inside. Strong and Peck used to be called the Forrest Gump of Hollywood because he knew everybody, blah, 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 blah. They go on to say there was an actual victim. Toward the end, Strong admits that he's so uncomfortable doing the episode for multiple reasons. I still feel like we should not be ruining this man's life. I still feel that. I think there's a lot of layers to that, and it just makes me so uncomfortable. The fact that this person, this convicted child sex offender, worked on Boy Meets World is not even one of the top 100 facts about Boy Meets World in the universe. After this, it's going to be the thing. It's going to rise to the top of what of the most talked about facts about us in our show. I don't like the idea that we are affecting the cultural memory of Boy Meets World, which is this. That's a bummer, because I feel like in my experience, Boy Meets World is not part of it. It's not a big part of it. This has to be with me now as a 47-year-old man, the person I've become, and this affected me as a person. It didn't affect the show in any way, shape, or form. It does affect my memory of the show in any way, shape, or form. As a matter of fact, most of my memories of this person and this manipulation happened after Boy for me. So I think people will disconnect the two. So my issue with that statement is that they made it about the fact that they think Boy Meets World is now tainted. How about the child that was affected by this? Nowhere in this, no, did you address, like, you didn't have to say Drake's name, but nowhere in this did you apologize to Drake for your letter. Nowhere in there did you apologize. Nowhere in there did you say, you know what, I shouldn't have done that. That was a bad decision on my part. I should not have done that. Like, and it's like, he needs an apology more than anyone else. So Drake's response to this was, I really appreciate their perspective now, but that day is so ingrained in my mind. Nobody reached out to me. That's the thing. That's the thing. That's the thing. That's the thing. I do appreciate that Ryder Strong did reach out to him, and that he feels, and that Drake said he feels nothing but love and forgiveness for him. But, like, I just don't understand. I just don't understand why on earth you would write a letter in any way, shape, or form that may or may not have been not a good idea. Like, I'm just saying. Okay. So, I do want to also note that Drake does not blame Dan Schneider for what happened to him, and he's 100% accurate. Dan's not responsible for the actions of Brian, but what he is responsible for is allowing that man on set. Because, see, that's my issue with Dan. Dan calls Drake, says, was it you? Says yes, and continues to, before he's even, like, he automatically knew it was him, but didn't do anything prior to his arrest about it. That's an issue for me. So then they go on to talk about Dan. Dan gets more power in the 2000s. His comedy really becomes sexualizing young girls. Alexis Nichol, who played Nicole on Zoe 101, talks about how Nicole was boy crazy and the short skirts. She talks about how there was a scene with a prop that could be sexual, and you couldn't question Dan, and you couldn't ask him why he was doing these things. And then Victorious comes onto the scene, and it gets worse. There are several scenes with Ariana Grande that clearly is sexual. 2014 Kids' Choice Awards, Dan earns a Lifetime Achievement Award. Jeanette McCurdy doesn't show up. Okay, so that's important to note, that Jeanette does not show up. This is where they start talking about Jeanette. So 8 years later, Jeanette McCurdy's book comes out. She talks about a creator but has never named Dan. That's important to note, that she talks about the creator, but she does not specifically say Dan. And it really does appear that Dan's treatment of people was an open secret around him. And Nick never removed Dan for interacting with the cast. So at this point, Nickelodeon, like, starts to realize that everyone knows what Dan did. Jeanette wrote her book. You know, all these things are starting to come to light about Dan Schneider. So what Nick does is they remove Dan from interacting from the cast, but never fire the man. That's my other issue. My other issue is that all these things went on. Okay? Dan was allowed to be sexual with this comedy with kids. Dan was allowed to be verbally abusive, and nobody from Nickelodeon said, you know what, let's have a conversation about this at all. In 2017, after he was told away to stay from the cast, the Me Too movement starts and made it okay to talk about toxic workplaces. In 2017, a new investigation is done into Dan. And that's when Nickelodeon drops him. And Dan did not react well to this. The investigation and what Nickelodeon does to fire him is they change the locks on Nick on Sunset. So it takes an open investigation into Dan for Nickelodeon to be like, you know what, let's change the locks. He can't come in here. The investigation did not find anything inappropriate, but did find things abusive on set. It's important to note that he did not find anything abusive. Dan has not made any new shows at all, but he is trying to reemerge into kids' television, which I think is ridiculous. So now we talk about Drake. Drake was signed and got so many deals and struggled with addiction. He went through breakup. He went through bankruptcy, had a slow decline, bad DUIs, bad behaviors. So again, Drake took a plea deal, a plea of child endangerment for text messages that this young girl lied about her age and initiated. Once he found out it was her age, he shut it down, but he did take, the media got misinformation. And then he just kind of falls off the face of the earth, really, like moves to Mexico and like doesn't really come back. So like that's kind of the end of his story. And then he hits rock bottom. He goes to trauma therapy. And he's surrounded by people for the first time who really understand him. And I think that's just like really important to note, like the importance of therapy. I'm going to do a whole episode on like my therapy journey. Because like my therapy journey wasn't the same as Drake's, but my therapy journey was complicated and I feel it's important to note. So we are going to address two things next. I don't know if this has all of it, but we're gonna, so Dan Schneider does an interview not too long after this interview is done. This documentary is done. I also think it's important to note that when Dan does this interview, he sits down with Boogie, who was an actor on iCarly. So in my opinion, that was by design and was done purposefully. I don't think it was cool. He states that he definitely owes some people a pretty strong apology. He says, I'm embarrassed that I did it. I apologize to anybody that I ever put in that situation. Like, that's kind of the gist of what he says. To me, it doesn't really feel genuine. He says he was devastated when he learned of Brian's behavior, explaining that he did not hire the dialect coach for the network, but regrets nonetheless on having him around. He even revealed that he helped Drake's mother pen her statement for Brian's sentencing. Okay, that gets you brownie points, like, for helping Drake's mom. But that honestly, when I watched that video, it was not something that felt genuine. And then I'm going to talk about one more thing before we get to the reason why I don't feel like it was genuine. So, Dan defends his relationship with Amanda Bynes. Claiming that she wanted that for herself. When he sat down with Boogie, he's like, we supported her. Like, Amanda was between the ages of 16 and 17. She wanted to get emancipated from her parents, which is fairly common with successful young actors at that time. She wanted that for herself, so she turned to her team when she included her lawyer, her agent, her manager, her publicist, me, because she included me as part of her team, thought of me that way. We supported her. She tried to get emancipated. It ended up not working out, and she didn't. I don't necessarily believe him. You know, he's trying to make excuses for, like, why she was there in the first place. Like, it just doesn't feel genuine to me. You know, one of the people that were on Quiet of the Set in episode 5, like, brought up the point that, like, Dan was an actor first, which I didn't realize, which totally explains why I feel the way that I feel. Completely. So, in episode 5, they talk about Giovanni Samuels and Brian Hart, the pair who participated in the first 4 episodes of the documentary. You know, and I think this is actually the thing. So, Brian says, the thing about his interview as a whole, I thought it was funny. If I can be candid, Dan was an actor before all of this. He appeared on season 7 and 8. I think that he brushed off some chops, gave us a nice interview. Where was that apology when Jeanette Mayer McCurdy's book came out? Which is true. He continued, he just talks about, like, where's the accountability? realistically, if you take the inappropriate jokes away, do you show any? Do you have a show anymore? Because Dan said we could take the inappropriate jokes away. This is where Giovanni talks about how she got a phone call from Dan. He reached out a week before the documentary aired. He asked if I could give a quote of support. He knew I was in the documentary for a year. He was like, I love Gio. She's great. She's nice. She could tell my side. I don't know what you want, he asked, because I did come back to Henry Danger. He was like, you had a good time on set, right? Right? I told him I was terrified of him. You had the power to make people stars, and I was intimidated by you, but you did a good job. So I just think that that's interesting that he reached out to Giovanni, because, like, why were you reaching out to somebody you knew were in the documentary when you know she wasn't going to give you a quote of support? So that's just kind of my take on Quiet on the Set 4. I just want to, like, kind of say to Drake, like, I appreciate your vulnerability, your honesty, your just everything. And I truly hope that you get the healing and the life you deserve now at 40. There are some choices that were made. And people that I can't help but feel like were planted in your life by somebody. Because I'm not fully convinced that young girl came to you on your own devices. I can't help but feel like Brian was trying to set you up because, you know, she was coming to your shows, he was doing all these things, and that she was exhibiting behavior Brian did. That's all I'm going to say. So I wish you nothing but the best in healing. Drake, from one survivor to another, if you ever want to sit down and have a conversation, mic'd or unmic'd, I'm down. I've never publicly spoke about my situation, but I would love to sit down and talk to you. I feel like, especially now as parents and parenting from a situation where we've been abused, would be a really good conversation, and I'd be down to have it. So thank you guys for listening to Quiet on the Set Part 4 discussion recap. I have some lighter episodes coming. We're going to talk about my therapy journey and some other things. So until next time, let's have a great day, and I will see you all soon.